Hi, I'm Angela Jorgensen, and along with Steve Howe, we'd like to welcome you to Protect Nova Scotia's Coastline, the podcast, brought to you by karmicpup.ca. Thank you for listening.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. Today, I'd like to welcome back Sandra Weldon from Scott's Bay. Today, we thought we'd catch up with you, Sandra, and just find out what's been happening. I hear there's a lot that's been happening at Scott's Bay, so perhaps you can fill us in from and update us from the last time that we spoke to you.
Okay. Yes, there has been a lot happening, that's for sure. And the group that we have here in the community that is working very hard, very diligently for the last 2.5 years, we're all very tired. The public hearing comes up on May the 2nd. So we're hoping that we finally come, put this to rest. We have had multiple meetings back and forth with our own little core group. We had the PAC meeting, which we had like the people that we had speaking for us, the professional people that came to talk to us about and talk to the council. And give reports on, like, there were chicken farmers in Nova Scotia, there were, other people from the farm boards, there was, let me see, Department of Resources, some people in the community got hired, Harborside, the traffic analysts. They're an extremely well-known company in Halifax, and they are very good at what they do. But we weren't satisfied with the report from the Department of Transport because they didn't, they just wrote it off. They didn't see that anything was wrong with it in regards to the crossing of the road in that intersection that goes from the proposed campground to the beach itself. There's a very sharp turn there. Trucks, RVs, tractors, you can't, your line of vision, your sight is blocked at this turn. So they were hired to present theirs. It's just been, we're absolutely astonished that it has been able to get this far. So we've had the PAC meeting, then we had the initial reading, and of course those things are on the Municipality of King's website that is broadcast on YouTube, so anybody can see that and listen to that if they wish. Our particular project here has received 500 views, which is, they said they've never ever seen that. So it's hopefully going to come to an end. We are going to have the people that spoke before speaking again. And for the actual decision-making meeting, the next one, there will be like these people are coming back. We probably have confirmed about 60 people who are going to go to that particular meeting. 40 of them want to speak, so I'm not sure how many we'll actually end up with, but when they gave us that particular date, when the mayor gave us that particular date, he said that that day was, there were other things to be dealt with, but we had a total separate day because they knew it was going to be so long. There was going to be so much brought up, so much to be considered. So they weren't even putting anything else in with this. And they said it would be a long go. We have people coming from Tatamagoush, from Halifax. The developers are like, they still have their head in the sand. They're trying to make all kinds of changes to what their plan is, even to go so far as to put the camp, like the tenting campgrounds, up in behind the house and the land that's there so that it's farther into the woods. So we're now trying to get like fire personnel to come and record the dangers of that. It has been approved already as not being a concern by the fire chief in Canning, his deputy fire chief, his first deputy chief, who, like Jeff, is the developer, is the chief of that fire department. So, you know, how biased is that? Yeah. And the harbor side, when they came and did their review, they said that in order for that particular spot to be able to be accessed properly and safely, that there were two houses that need to be torn down and a whole line of trees that belongs on to the next house's property. And they said even with that, they would not be able to put an entrance into the campground where it is now. It would have to be moved down the road on the other side of the existing house that they want to tear, that would, they say, it would have to be torn down. They also say that there has to be sidewalks in order for safety for people to who are going, and possibly even a light so that people can know that there are people who want to cross. The property developers came back with their solution to the crossing problem by saying that they would have a shuttle go from the campground to the beach, which is like it's not far enough for a shuttle. And how many people are going to take a shuttle? How often is it going to be accessible? But the council itself has determined that the report from Harborside is not allowed to be presented because, or they're, I guess they can talk about it, but they can't show their actual the work that they've done to show that, like through slides or anything like that, because Department of Transport okayed it, and so it wasn't needed. They didn't disagree with the findings. They just said that it wasn't needed. So they're not going to let us present that stuff. So that's two of the things. Let's see.
I know the last time we spoke, Sandra, you were talking about infrastructure and you did touch on having those people come in and look at the roadway. But there was also a cemetery nearby. And also, was there waterways or certain things that would have to be redirected?
The water, that's another concern. We have actually we have somebody in our community who is a hydrogeologist, and he has done multiple studies on like he has done cases basically all over the world, like overseas, everything. Like he's got a 30-year history of this is what he does. And he came and looked at the site. He did the studies, and we have a there is a concern for the water usage. If you it's considered that an average person home will use about 2,000 liters of water a day. So if you put in 100 campsites and they have access to water and stuff, you're looking at probably 20,000 liters of water a day going out. And they just don't realize, like the campers will go in and they may end up running water for a long time, or like I've been at Blomidon Park here when the water has been, the tap has been turned on and it's been like run. There's he said that there will be a shortage of water because there are a couple of homes here that run out of water now sometimes when it's a really dry summer. He also said that it, the basalt that it runs that run, the water goes through, runs all the way across the North Mountain to the South Mountain. So that is a very large concern as well. So those are a couple of things there. They also, the landowners, when they redid the title for the property, and I don't remember if I mentioned this to you last time or not, but there were five other homes that had water rights to the well that is on that property, and they deleted them. They just told the lawyer to leave them off. So I think two people still have, one still has water rights, even though they don't need them because it's a relative. And the other fellow has it on, like he just bought the house a couple of years ago and it was on his deed then. But it would cost him $3,800 to go to a lawyer and fight to have it put back on. So their tactics are not honorable. To say,
Obviously
the planner that is the head of this particular file is not and never has been a rural planner. She's always been urban and city planner. So she moved here from Ontario. She really doesn't know much about the agriculture aspect of it. And she's been very difficult. We've had information sent to her that she has not passed along to the other counselors. We have here, I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but a lot of people have preserve, say no to the campground, preserve Scott's Bay. So there are quite a few of those signs up in the valley, in the community. And she bragged at work that she ripped a bunch of them down. We took it to human resources, and the mayor looked at it supposedly and basically said, "No, we don't have any proof of that." But there were people in a meeting that she was in that heard her brag about it. So it's just been the at the beach, the tides are so high right now that the area that goes into the salt marsh is kind of blocked with some silt and stuff, and there are people in the community who go down and try and keep that cleared out. But now, 50% of the time when the tide comes in, it goes up and over the little bridge and halfway up the roadway that goes into the beach. So there have been cars that there was a picture that was taken of a car that was actually like up to the windows in the salt water and was kind of like tipped over towards its side, because that's how bad the marshes have gotten, that with the higher tides, the climate change, it just happens. And we're looking at more of that happening if they go digging on that property, because it's an uphill grade. So anything is going to run downhill and into the brook that goes down into the salt marshes, block up more, plug up more. There will be pollutants that go into that and will go right out to sea. There's fish in that brook, you know. And people may mean well, but when you're camping and vacationing, like it just, all that stuff goes out the window, it seems. I mean, they're not all bad people, but it's the things that they don't think about. That's a big issue. And to have something like that plopped right into the middle of the community where there's going to be so much destruction from it, plus the fire risk with the thoroughbred horses that are just down the road, and the noise, the fireworks. The counselor came over and asked, "So where are you going to move that business?" Instead of, like, she's already got her mind made up that this is going here, and whatever effect it may have on the other businesses, they're going to have to deal with it. It is, as I mentioned, I think last time, it's in the middle of a farm. So on one side is a chicken barn, and on the other side, there is another chicken barn being built right now. It's just, I don't know, I don't know how campers are going to like being that close to the smell of chicken or chicken catchers, right? Like,
yep.
Noisy when they come
Oh,
in. Yeah, and they come in the middle of the night. That's when they catch the chickens. So, yeah, and with noise, apparently chickens will all they do what they call side. So, it, like say if there were fireworks or something like that going on, the chickens would get scared and they'd all run to the side of the building, and so they can trample each other. And so, you're looking at losses big time. There is a meat shop in Canning, and it's a wonderful meat shop, and everybody, you know, loves their smoked meats and any other kind of meat that they have. People travel long distances to go there. Well, their smokehouse is up here in the bay, so that's another, like there's three businesses right there, and then there's a couple of cattle farms, and then there's small vegetable farm that's here as well. And it's just when we look at that many people, you know, our beach is going to, like our beach now, or the provincial beach now is on the weekends, you can hardly get down that road because it's blocked up with traffic on both sides, you know. So, and yeah, it's
and if
just
there's emergency vehicles they need to get there, et cetera.
It's exactly. And
yep.
That's, and the other thing too, which they really haven't seemed to take into consideration, is if there is a fire here, they have in the bay, they have a state, what they call Station 2. And it is like just a little station adjoined to the one in Canning. It's run by the same chief and captains and whatever. They have one pumper, that's all. And they have their van that they go back and forth to practices in. And then they have a four-wheeler. But that's what they have for equipment. So anything else, the closest anything else is in Canning. And that's 30 kilometers, well, no, 25 kilometers away, 24, 25 kilometers away. If you're driving one of those big trucks up the mountain, you're not going to get there quickly. And I don't understand how the fire departments can write off on the fire issues when if there's a woods fire there, it's going to be DNR. You know, the fire departments are back up if they need them.
Yeah.
So it just, none of it makes any sense. So I don't know. And there's in their own policy, it says that for A2 land, if there is a, it, so the mix of that is residential and agriculture. So you can build a property for your farm workers to live on. You can build a building, or you can build your home, and then you have your agriculture use land. It's not supposed to be anything else. But they say, I wrote it down here, in the event of a conflict between agriculture use and non-agriculture use, the agricultural use shall take priority. That's their own policy. That's not what's happening here.
Interesting.
So I don't know. It's and it also says that it's not supposed to negatively impact nearby agricultural operations or contribute to undue conflict with rural residents. And it's doing that as well. And one of our people on our committee is like, he backs right on the property. So his land adjoins the campground land. He could stand in his backyard and throw a stone over onto the, you know, and real estate rates, they're already property that we have for sale here. One of the first things the real estate agent is asked is that campground still going to go in there? Because if it is, I'm not interested. So that's going to go down too. It's just, you know, it's, we have, the developer indicates that they want to have this campground because her father used to let people camp in a little small section of it, but it was like family friends that came in. She wants to continue that. Plus, she wants to have something for her daughter who has Down syndrome to do. Her daughter doesn't like people. She doesn't like crowds. She goes to school and they give her lunch in a room that's off to herself. She just, I don't know how that's going to work for her. Plus, we have people in our community here that are have handicaps, whether it's physical or mental. And does her child take priority over them? They live here. They've lived here all their lives. We have a couple of people who are in the motor driven the motor wheelchairs.
Yeah.
That's the only way that they get from point A to point B in the Bay. If they want to go visit, like if Danny wants to go visit his brother, like that's the way he goes. And with all, it's not going to be safe. It's not safe now a lot of the time. So we're really looking forward to the end of this. We've been gearing up for it. You know, we're concerned about the birds and the fish, and it's, you know, it's just, it's sad to see, you know, you always figure there's a little bit of corruptness in government, but I guess I wasn't sure it was even on that level, like that lower level, but yeah. It is. Yeah.
And it's really disheartening. Pardon me. I know that we, you know, and Steve can attest to this, that, you know, the amount of time that we put into sending emails to phone calls to try to get the municipality to do something. And then we thought they actually were going to do something. So they actually hired some consultants to come in, look at doing some kind of protection of some sort. And when they made the presentation, you know, the municipality said, no, go back and make these changes because we're not satisfied. And then of course the government comes out, acts as the yes. Coastal Protection Act. And the very next day, the municipality just threw it out the window. So there goes the taxpayers' money that was used to hire these consultants for the amount of work that they did. And as Steve, you know, because you, I believe you're at the meeting or you watched the meeting, had done quite a good job at coming up with some proposals, and they just deflated them and said, nope, go back, do it again. So that was just another huge waste of taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just a quick question, Sandra. It's because they're going against their own policies, and that, is there a legal footing for any way to fight this?
We do have some lawyers involved, but I think it can't. I don't think it can be until it goes to UARB.
Okay.
I'm not sure on that, but actually, this is kind of interesting too. The municipality got their lawyers to tell our people to back off. Yeah, because they figured that we were not being so very nice to the planner and the counselor in our own area. So they sent letters for us to back off with the questions and the, so there goes your transparency, right? There's nobody to turn to. You can't look for clarification from anybody. But one of the other things that we found out was that when there have been a huge percentage of proposals and rezoning that have been approved by council, and then it has gone to UARB. Like there's a ton of them here. And every one of those, the people who are like, the people who are against the project and want to send it to UARB, they have to pay for the lawyers and whatever that go there. However, we as taxpayers pay for the lawyers that the municipality uses. And those expenses, every time the municipality goes to UARB, it's $45,000. If you've got 10 of those that are going, and we do easily, so we pay for it on both ends. We pay for their defense and we pay for ours.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Sandra. I just want to say that's the Nova Scotia Utility and Review Board, correct? The
Yes, that's true.
UARB?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just for, I had to look it up. Sorry.
That's, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's,
So, yeah. So, when did you say the next meeting is? On the
the
May
next
2nd?
meeting on May 2nd, yes. And it starts at 6 o'clock, I believe. And any of you that want to come down, you're more than welcome. It's a
And
long walk.
I hope you kept that letter because they can't intimidate you like that by saying, essentially back off. Like
Oh, everything
that's
has been.
it.
Everything has been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm
And
just wondering because, sorry, go ahead.
no, you go ahead.
I was just wondering if anybody else has reached out in support to help you guys, like the Ecology Action Center. I know there's groups forming to try and do some activism and help areas. I'm just wondering if how much support you have from other groups.
I would have to check with Anne on that. She is she's our most knowledgeable person of all of the different areas that you can go to. She has a degree, master's, I think, in community research and development and all of that kind of stuff. So one of the things that she does is write grants, and so she would know more of who else is there to reach out to. I know that she did reach out to a company in Halifax in regards to the salt marsh, and has been trying to get them once again to respond, and they have intimated that they may send people down to help us get our salt marsh back to where
Nice.
it should be, because it does, it already needs a lot of work. So it's going to be terrible. There are two houses that are on the same side of the road, in front of where the campsite should be, that are going to be terribly affected by the silt and the runoff that's going to be, because it is a downward grade. And we've had some pretty heavy rains here. One actually washed out the road that comes up the main mountain here, not that long ago. So we had to find alternate routes down. Oh, and the other thing that I wanted to mention too, before I forget, the fires that we had last year in, it was it Cole Harbour?
Hammonds
Hubbard's
Plains and
and
Shelburne.
Hammonds Plains. Okay, Hammonds Plains, and then the Shelburne area. After those fires, the government said that they did not want to see development in rural areas that were kind of like a cul-de-sac, where there was one way in and one way out. That's what we are. There's only one road into Scott's Bay and one road out. After you pass Stuart Mountain Road, that's it. So if there's a huge fire like there was there, they can't get to us. Right? So
And I know the last time we had Sharon on from Green Bay, and the last hurricane, because of where the RV park was constructed at the end of the beach road, what
Yes.
happened is all the water got redirected down to all the cottages.
Oh no.
And I believe you saw the photos of the boulders and the rocks in the road.
Yes.
So they couldn't even pass through. You couldn't get a vehicle at all because they had to get an excavator in just to remove all the boulders, because that's what happens. So that would presumably be kind of the same situation with you with the
We'd
water issue. If,
right. Yeah, we'd have flooding across that road, and probably a few inches of sand and dirt and silt.
does the developer have a timeline and can they start construction before
They
at
can't.
any time, or do you have to go through this process?
We have to go through this process. It has to be
Okay.
approved by council, that they can have this development agreement. Now, it was supposed to be a rezoning, and it changed to a development agreement because there's so many things in their policy that won't allow them to do an actual rezone. So they are looking now to do a development agreement, and they can, once they get that agreement, they can go at their own speed. Like they have it divided now into three different phases, but they can start on phase three if they want to. There's no designation as, okay, you have to start phase one and then you move on to phase two in a certain period of time. That's not there. They can just put it all in at one time if they want to. They don't even live in the community. Like, you know, it's...
Yeah, that's what I find really frustrating, is that a lot of these developers don't live within the community and just want to come in and build these huge campgrounds and parks without any consideration for the community or the people living in the community. And what's even more disheartening is the fact that the municipality, who in most cases are people that have grown up in the community, turning a blind eye to their own community.
Yes, I don't think there's anybody in the municipality that is from here. But she lived here until she was 16 or 17, and then she went off to university, and her mother lived here until just recently, when she built her mother a new home, and then over across the mountain out of the community, and decided that this is what she wanted to do with the land. So even though she did live here at one time, and she does have relatives here, but she doesn't live here. And most of her relatives don't want this either. There are a couple that do. Even the last time when we had the initial reading, she spoke and she said that if the community, basically what she said, I can't remember the exact wording, but basically what she said was, if the community put up so much fuss that she couldn't do this, like she was prepared to put a convenience store in along with the campground so that that would help the people in the community, they wouldn't have to drive so far to go to town, blah, blah, blah. And so she even indicated that if she couldn't get her way in this, then there was no way that she or anyone else in her family for generations would do anything to help Scott's Bay. And we're like, we don't need your help. We don't need your help.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't live here. We're doing fine. We live here because it is the way it is.
So. Now, it's interesting because I don't know this person, and I'm just kind of wondering, you know, to take on a project like that would cost a substantial amount. And I think, I don't know if you know what happened in Cherry Hill, but they put up a piece of the property for sale.
I think I did hear that, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, we're certainly relieved about that. Sometimes the devil you know can be better than the devil you don't, but in this case, at least, you know, I'd like to think that we helped dissuade them a little bit, you know. And, you know, having signs everywhere saying we don't want you, would probably deter some people from wanting to camp there, knowing that you're not wanted. But I'm wondering if she's getting any kind of funding or grants or anything to be able to do this.
Both she and her husband owned businesses that they sold. Okay. She owned a physiotherapy clinic, and she sold that. And it was quite well known. He owned a place that made specialty shoes and sole provider is what it was called, because it was had everything to do with shoes and sneakers and whatever. And they would fit people, or they would, you know, do adjustments to footwear, that kind of thing. And he sold that business. So they have the funds from those.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah.
Where's your MLA in all this?
He won't discuss it.
He won't discuss.
No, he doesn't want to discuss it. He's friends with the developers, and so
What's
he
his
came up.
name, Sandra? Sorry. What's your MLA's name?
John Lohr.
Sorry, John
Lohr.
Lohr. Okay.
LOHR. That's the MLA, right?
Yeah. Okay. Thank
Yeah,
you.
and he comes from a farming family. But he's just he's friends with the developers. He did come over and have a look at the area where the new chicken barn is being built. And it wasn't he came over, it wasn't for him to get into a conversation with in regards to the campground, but it was to show him where the chicken barn is being built so that he could see the distance between it and the campground, and also to see the condition of the wharf road, which is where you go to the beach, and also the thoroughbreds, so that he could, and the family that have the thoroughbreds, they are like so well known amongst horse people. They sold one of their colts to Denmark, the royal family in Denmark. And I think it may have left now, but when John was up, he had his picture taken with the horse, but it's for their princess to ride. So, but
Wow.
and then he went, like I say, he went down to the Wharf Road to see the condition of the road there, and the little park and the bridge. And it's just, I think we're a little bit paranoid as well, because a couple of days after that, the developer came over and was up taking pictures off of the bridge and the condition of the road and stuff. So we're thinking, I wonder if he got a heads up from the LA MLA on something that he's going to try to see if he can work around. But like I say, we're paranoid by now, so
Yeah, I can
Right.
relate to
Yep.
yeah. Oh. Yep. Yeah.
Well, it looks like you're in a bit of a pickle, but I hope everything goes for you on the 2nd of May.
I hope so too. Like I say, we have a lot of people with so much behind them professionally, like the hydrologist. We also have forensic accountant who is doing due diligence on this. And when she was there, our last meeting, she writes everything down and she questions everything. She researches. She's got her own company. Anyway, she brought up the point that the developer, and she didn't mention his name, but that he had a conflict of interest because he was the fire chief. And that he should recuse himself from any more dealings that had to do with this. He was not happy. He got up afterwards and he was quite angry and basically told her that he had already spoken to his lawyer and his lawyer would be forwarding a letter or something in regards to the loss of his professionalism, you know, like the yeah, oh yes, like
His reputation.
yes, yeah, his reputation as a fire chief, a businessman, a person, like that she cast aspersions on that or whatever, but and she didn't respond. It really wasn't worth responding to.
No.
No.
And
So.
that's what we've been trying to do. When we talk, we try to just kind of stick to the facts that as we have them, the policy things, how things are going to be affected, the dangers. When the developers get up there, they are speaking to us on an emotional level instead of you know, and yeah. So we had one of the people that got up to speak for them who was really quite rude and defamatory to the community and the people here. So, and we just try to, you know, I'm sure we all had some shocked looks on our faces, but we don't respond to that.
No,
No,
no.
good for you. Yep. So Sandra, if somebody what can the community or anyone do if they want to reach out, or do you have a petition?
We have a web page.
Web page, okay.
It is the website is Preserve Scott's Bay. If you just Google that, it should bring you up to that. We
Okay.
have a petition that has through what's the one that's online petition everybody uses. Anyway, we have petition that one and
Change.org. Change.org.
Anyway, we have like 1300 names on the petition that are against this. And once it reaches 1000, then it goes off to the mayor and the councilors so that they can see that there's that many people who are against it. But yes, people can write letters to the municipality, and like they can write them to Mayor Peter Matart. And that's if you go under Municipality of Kings County, that will be his email address will be there. And he's supposed to forward them all to the councilors. So we have quite a few letters that have gone in as well. And some of them have kind of been hidden at the bottom of the pile, but we expect that. We have also had a couple of the councillors come over to view the property where they want to have the campground to show how close it is to the chicken barns and to the horse barn. And there have been a couple who came over and didn't realize that that's where they wanted the campground to go. Because we're not against a campground, we're against where it is. Like in the middle of the community, there's land on either side of the community going down towards Cape Split or going back out of the bay. And one of the farmers actually offered to trade them a piece of land and say, look, up here, you've got a beautiful view. You know, it's right there. There's not all of the concerns, whatever. And they said, no, they had to have beach access. So anyway, she offered to work with them to develop some sort of a project that would be beneficial for everybody and not be like a campground. And no, they don't want to do that either. They just have their mind set on this one thing, and that's what they want to do.
Well, Sandra,
Yep.
well, if we I don't know if we'll be with you on May 2nd, but we'll be thinking about you and wishing you guys the best of luck. I'm gonna get the podcast up right away and get the word out on all of our socials. So,
All right.
yeah, I think the more that we get people involved and the more education and the more people know,
Yes.
then people get upset about this and really want to help. So we
Yes.
will certainly do that.
That's a good thing that there are people who do want to help with something like this. I know when the developer or the planner put up on the overheads the picture of the property itself. And where the other like where the farm was going to be and where this was going to be, like she didn't include, there were some things that she didn't include, so it would be impossible to see how close this was, or how bad that corner was, or that stuff. So yeah, they're doing their best to get it through. We're doing our best to stop them. Thank
Well, good for you.
luck to you. Hope things
you
go
very
well.
much.
And
Thank
maybe
you.
what we'll do, Sandra, is after the meeting we can connect again and just see how it went and what's happening. We'd like to see how it's going for you guys.
Absolutely, that would be great. Thank
All
you so
right. Thank you
much.
so
Thank
much, Sandra. Take care.
luck.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Protect Nova Scotia's Coastline. I'd like to take a minute and thank East Coast rock indie musician Rich O'Coin for allowing us to sample a portion of his song 456 off of his album Synthetic Season 1. It's an absolutely fabulous album, so thank you, Rich. It means a lot. And until next time, take care, everyone.